station.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth.
Good morning, it is KBOO, KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Coming up on your Thursday morning, we've got Fight the Empire, not that tough a word, but still, Fight the Empire with Per Fogering in about a half hour. At 10, it'll be Air Cascadia. At 10:15, join us for Flashpoints. And at 11, it's Between the Covers, and 11:30, it's Black Book Talks. So stick around, lots coming up here on your Thursday. It's the Boo, and coming up next, Press Watch, with news you're not supposed to know. Teresa Mitchell is standing by.
Join KBOO Community Radio at Clinton Street Theater on Thursday, September the 8th for United We Stand Up, a comedy show and a benefit for KBOO. I'm T6 and I'll be your host that night, which will feature local comedians like Betty Lungen, Bree Pruitt, Adam Potsey, Brandy Morgan, Belinda Giles, Noriko Ott, and Debbie Wooten. Raffles, refreshments, and good times for all. Again, that's United We Stand Up, Thursday, September the 8th, at Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Doors at 6:30, showcase at 7:30. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I was just out at the Springwater Corridor Trail, the bicycle trail that became a camping spot, which is being cleared off today by the city of Portland. And I'll have some more details on that in a moment. First, I wanted to get to some headlines. This is not really news you're not supposed to know, but it is the latest news that there is a hurricane, a tropical storm, possibly a hurricane, heading for the western Florida coast. This from the NOAA, nhc.noaa.gov. That's the National Hurricane Center with National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The tropical storm warning has been extended northward for the Atlantic coast to Surf City, North Carolina's tropical storm watch has been issued north of Surf City to Oregon Inlet, North Carolina, including Pamlico Sound. Hurricane watch and tropical storm warning have been discontinued west of the Walton Bay County line. A hurricane warning is in effect for Suwannee River to Mexico Beach in Florida. Hurricane watch is in effect for Anclote River to Suwannee River, west of Mexico Beach to the Walton Bay County line. So there they think that the winds will get over 74 miles per hour, and tropical storm warning is in effect for much of Florida. Their discussion says the center of tropical storm Hermine was located near 27.4 north longitude, 86 west. Hermine is moving towards the north-northeast near 14 miles an hour, and this motion with a slight increase in forward speed is expected during the next day or so. On the forecast track, the center of Hermine will be near the Florida coast in the hurricane warning area tonight or early Friday. And they say hurricane conditions are expected to reach the coast of Florida within the warning area beginning tonight. Winds are expected to first reach tropical storm strength by this afternoon, making outside preparations difficult or dangerous. Preparations to protect life and property should be rushed to completion. Tropical storm conditions are expected to begin with a warning area along the Atlantic coast on Friday and spread northward through Friday evening. And tropical storm conditions are possible in the tropical storm watch area by Friday night and Saturday. And so there's a lot more information on that, and you can find the details at nhc.noaa.gov. And of course, Wonderground also has a good report on it. Today is the day of the favela purge at the Springwater Corridor Bicycle Trail. You know what a favela is. It's the place everyone goes when there's no place to go. And it's something that you find in what are probably inappropriately called third world countries. And now that the United States has gone so far down that path since Reaganomics in the 80s, we also have our favelas. And we have them in every city. I went down to the Springwater Corridor earlier this morning at the intersection of 92nd and Southeast Flavel to see what was happening. And I would like to ask you to call in if you have direct information on what is going down. Of course, I could only spend a few minutes there since I was preparing for this show. But I did say earlier this year that now that I have the time, I intend to do more direct reporting. So I wanted to see what was happening. Went out there with my audio rig. And the local corporate press was in evidence with vans, video rigs, and a helicopter. But the cleanup crews were yet to arrive. Most campsites had been vacated. And it was interesting to note that flattened semicircles of tall grass that marked previous camps were largely well cleaned up, evidently by their former occupants. And I could count quite a few of those. By the way, I didn't give you the number to call in if you have information. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. As I was saying, I could see many places where tents had been. And I hadn't been out there, so I was a bit surprised to see how many tents had been out there. There were an awful lot of people there at some point, but I would estimate that 70 or 80% of the campers, just going by the former camps, 70 or 80% of the campers had left. Many of those remaining seemed in the process of packing up. The odor of human waste was in the air in places. I did see feces on the asphalt, even though Port-a-John facilities were nearby. A walker for the mobility impaired was abandoned on the trail. And there was evidence of intravenous drug use scattered among the debris. A group of men stopped me, questioning my credentials and saying I could go no further, and seemed to be up to some sort of aggression, but reconsidered when a very large camper told them to desist. They said that the cleanup crews were not yet to be seen. The overall impression I had was of a grim tenseness among the remaining campers, and certainly the sound of the hovering helicopter added to that. So do the houseless have a place to go now that they've been run off? No. Latest from staff reporter for the Portland Business Journal, John Bell. He wrote, 6 months after the Portland City Council approved moving the Right to Dream 2 homeless camp from Old Town Chinatown to an industrial property in the Central East Side Industrial District, the State Land Use Board of Appeals has put the kibosh on the idea. And a nearly 70-page decision issued yesterday and first reported on by the Oregonian, the Land Use Board of Appeals board members took issue with the city classifying the camp as a community service use or rest area instead of a mass shelter, the latter of which is not permitted on properties zoned for industrial use. The property in question at Southeast 3rd Avenue and Southeast Harrison Street is zoned industrial and sits right next to Eastside Plating, a custom metal finishing company. There's more to that article. You can find it at Portland Business Journal. This is the camp that would have been a bit north of the OMSI location, for those of you who live in Portland, more familiar probably with OMSI, and close to the the bridge ramps. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Homelessness is a national problem. It is our problem. It's created by national, extremely extractive, hyper-capitalist policies. I have a place to live, and I have a source of cash, so when I have wrappers or whatever to dispose of, a truck comes around and takes it away, but we don't even offer that basic service to each other when the need is most dire. Instead, we blame the houseless for uncontained debris. And people I talked to complained about how they had been demonized simply for their status. Our people, the people of the United States, are living rough everywhere. They're living rough in Austin, Texas, for example, where a tiny percentage of homeless musicians and vets will soon move into an apartment complex on Lamar Boulevard, South Lamar, in Boston, Massachusetts. According to the Boston Globe, quote, Mayor Martin J. Walsh, appointed Boston's first special advisor on chronic homelessness Friday, part of an effort to fulfill his promise to house all the city's chronically homeless men and women, end quote. CBS LA reports, quote, there are more than 115,000 homeless people in California, 28,000 of whom are in Los Angeles. And homelessness is straining local government agencies' ability to offer public safety and social services. They said the city plans to spend $138 million on homelessness services and housing programs and put a $1.2 billion bond measure in the November ballot to generate ongoing funding to fight homelessness, end quote. Madison, Wisconsin has built a high-rise to shelter a few more people. Houston, Texas has a new law to help homeless high school students. Homeless high school students. A nationwide problem, and certainly happening right here in Portland. In Phoenix, Arizona, a shelter worker was convicted of stealing the identities of several homeless internees. Atlanta, Georgia just got a $2.4 million grant to help the homeless. I mention these pieces of the puzzle to give you the big picture. Homelessness and its associated misery have become a part of life in the entire nation. It's a real national emergency. It's our emergency. It's our people being treated like this. But unlike the imperial wars against ephemeral targets, funding to address the program, to address the problem, must be squeezed out of local budgets. And why is that? I ask because there is no sense to it. The fact is, we are occupied. We are occupied by our own military and held in debt to its financiers. The military extends its reach into our lives through its fully owned political system, through its dedicated banksters, and via the military-corrupted police forces that menace and intimidate us daily. When the military wants something, it gets it immediately and gold-plated if desired. Recently, McClatchy News Service reported the Pentagon cannot account for trillions of dollars worth of spending. And I have more information on that. But again, I ask for your phone calls, information about what is happening on the Springwater Corridor. Were you camping there? Have you moved out? Have you been out there? Are you out there currently? 503-231-8187. And Jim is on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I've been on the Springwater Corridor, you know, and I mean, maybe it's just because it's so close to the time that they're supposed to be clearing them out. But honestly, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen this type of garbage that everybody keeps complaining about. I mean, I have friends on Facebook who complain about it. And it's like, I mean, you know, like you said, it's like, you know, if we would, I don't know, it seems like the city has money for everything else except for addressing this problem. And it's like most of us are one paycheck away from living in a tent anyway.
Well, going out there I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, just for some, you know, it's like, you know, like you were saying too, you know, it's like this is not just a local emergency, but it's a national emergency. We should be able to pull from the federal budget to be able to deal with these problems in our communities, because ultimately it's just going to cost us more money to send the police to chase around homeless camps. So it's ridiculous. So,
well, I have to agree with what you're saying. I was just out there, as I said, this morning, and I did want to emphasize the first thing I saw was that people had cleaned up. There were other people, obviously a minority, and I would say overrepresented this type of person, if I may type. The dregs were left, basically. And what a drag it must be to live with some of the people, of course, who are homeless, not because, you know, of greater economic problems or whatever has struck them, but homeless because they're just so difficult to live with. I nearly got rolled, frankly, and was rescued at the last minute. People have complained about that, trying to bicycle down the trail and getting stopped by people, and that's exactly what happened to me. So I know that that does happen, and I did see the sort of refuse trash around that people have complained about. But again, the first thing I saw is that the great majority of the people there had not only cleared out when they were supposed to, but had cleaned up very nicely, because I could see these patches where the tents had been, where people had trod the grass around, and they were clean. And that means someone went around the camp and cleaned it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one thing that I look at, too, is it's like, you know, people like to say that money is the root of all evil, but it's really, it's the lack of money, you know, and it's like, people have been in situations where, I mean, at least for me personally, I've been in situations thinking, you know, it's like, man, I'm broke, what am I going to do for money? And it's like, you know, but if you dehumanize people long enough and you treat them like garbage long enough, eventually they're going to act exactly how you treat them. And it's almost self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, you sit here and you demonize people who are homeless, and you tell them they're no good, and all they hear is that they're no good. And then one day they turn around, they start trying, like you said, they tried to roll you. And it's like, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, what they were trying to do wasn't wrong, but at the same time, it's like, if we're not spending our time and our resources to uplift people who are in that type of abject poverty, it's like, what do you expect them to do? And then as soon as they do it, it's like, oh, see, I told you, they are no good.
Yes, it's like, it's self-fulfilling, it's all a part of a system of hierarchy, isn't it? And
I would say that
societies get the violence that they create.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's creating an enemy where there shouldn't be one. And for a government that claims that we are, you know, see, that's another thing too. I mean, not to get too far away from the subject, but, you know, it's like, people want to start talking about how this nation is a Christian nation. It's like, you know, if they really want to believe that and really want to tout that, they need to start doing the right thing and really start helping the homeless. I mean, I've been down on it, and I know there's some crazy homeless folks, but it's no different than homeless folks who live in the city. You know, it's just, you know, you're going to have people who talk to themselves. You're going to have people who are a little bit violent, but like you said, it's all a part of a culture of hierarchies. And ultimately, you, like I said, you dehumanize them long enough, they're going to become not human.
Yeah. Why should I beat around the bush? It's capitalism.
Exactly. Capitalism. That's right. Yeah. So anyway, thank you for your time. Thank you for bringing this up. And as much as possible, keep everybody up to date.
All right. Thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Joan is on the air.
Hello. Have you heard about the case of Larnell Malik Bruce?
I have not.
Okay. Quickly reading from the Oregonian. Quote, a couple of authorities believe chased down a 19-year-old stranger in Gresham and bowled him over with their Jeep were indicted Friday on murder charges.
Oh, I did hear about that, yes.
Yeah. So it's good that these people are being prosecuted. The killers are Russell Orlando Cordier and Colleen Catherine Hunt.
And I believe it was the Mercury that brought out that they were white supremacists.
Exactly. So I want to know what's going to be done with Cordier and Hunt being slapped with hate charges, because it doesn't seem like that's part of the prosecution for the murder of 19-year-old Larnell Malik Bruce. It seems like this is just being treated as some kind of little confrontation that culminated in a murder when they were actually white supremacists who murdered a 19-year-old black man who they happened to come across shopping in a convenience store.
I think that's a question that does have to be asked, and it brings up another question. Why does the Bureau of Prisons continue to encourage, and I do mean encourage, white supremacist groups?
Because most of the prison staff is white.
That would seem to be the answer on the face of it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your call.
Okay, bye.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Dave is on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, as a person who's lived on the streets of Portland, I can tell you that the most stressful thing about being on the streets is not just being on the streets or worrying about sweeps, it's your fellow homeless people, because they're a minority that they cause most of the problems, and a lot of them are addicted to meth and heroin. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, these people just need help. But some of them are not ready to get help yet. And in the meantime, they tend to prey upon people, you know, like people with disabilities and mental illness that are on the streets. And, you know, and I called in yesterday to tell them this, and the guy was just, like, pretty dismissive about it, saying, oh, you know, nobody's born bad. You know, these people just need help. And that's true. But, you know, there are, at the same time, there's people who are not ready to seek that help yet.
So right on. I think that's very relevant. And, you know, certainly that's what I experienced today. Not that I was surprised. I would say the people confront the person who is very much in favor of rolling me, I would say probably wasn't born bad. I don't believe that anyone's born bad. And yet this guy was bad news. I mean.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying what people should know, though, that that's a minority of homeless people. And it's a minority of homeless people that are throwing garbage and feces and needles everywhere. Because they just don't care. They don't care about you. They don't care about what you think about them. That's the place they're at right now. So, you know, it's easy. I mean, yeah, I hate to go by there and see all the garbage and everything. You know, it's just like I have to live in this city and they have to live in the city as well. And, you know, when you trash it, it's like a personal insult to everybody. You know, but, you know, so just so people know that, you know, it's just it really is a minority of people that's doing, you know, they're the most visible and they're the ones people see them and they think, oh, all these people are scumbags. But it's not that way. I mean, the vast majority of people I met on the streets are really decent people, you know. So anyway, that's just my 2 cents. Okay.
Thanks very much for calling in with that. Yes, that's what I found as well. And certainly I have also been homeless, and that was many years ago. But what were the reasons? Well, just didn't have sufficient cash. Why didn't I have cash? Didn't have the job. Why didn't I have the job at the time? I was kind of goofy. I was kind of hard to employ at the time. And there was no safety net, so I slept behind a 7-Eleven in Austin, Texas for a few nights. I remember that. Oh, many years ago. Let's see. 83, I think it was. Time is 9:21. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I've been inviting your calls about the sweep of the Springwater Corridor. As I was saying, I was out there. I saw a great many abandoned camps, and I did notice that most of those camps were rather carefully cleaned. These are our people, is the point I want to make. These are people that you'd be happy to be around. And the remnant, those remaining that I personally encountered, were rather difficult people. And as the caller was saying, that's part of the horror of living on the street, not just the conditions and the deprivation, but having to deal with that very small minority that makes its presence so painfully felt. Street thugs, they're out there, of course they are. Time is 9:22, number to call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Pam's on the air.
Hi, Teresa, good morning.
Good morning.
I never miss your show, love you very much.
Well, thanks.
Okay, so, you know, do you remember that big motel out at Jansen Beach that had a fire maybe a couple of years ago, fairly recently?
Jansen Beach. The first thing I want to think is Red Robin, but I don't think that's right.
Well, out there by the shopping center anyway.
Right.
By the bridge, the big bridge. Looks to me like half of it is standing. And if Homer wants to buy something, why doesn't he buy the half that's left? Because it's got rooms and it's probably still wired and plumbed and could be put to pretty good use.
Shall I guess?
Pardon?
I guess why Homer Williams doesn't do that?
Well, anyway, no, my question is, why don't we do that in general? I mean, it was an emergency before before that thing had caught fire.
Well, I think that's a good question. There are problems with concentrating people, and it gets into a situation in which people feel very much regimented and resistant to that, and I can sympathize with that as well. And yet, what is being provided? Not very much at all.
Friggin' warehouse.
And as I was reporting earlier, passing on the reports, there was an attempt to form a camp over just north of OMSI along the river,
right,
and that's got the kibosh from a land use board.
No, we can't do that. Well, anyway, and what about the one that was supposed to be, the center that was supposed to be provided by the old Washington School in Southeast?
These things seem to fall through with great regularity.
Right. I think the only thing that ever didn't fall through was moving people out by what was kind of a compost dump by the jail. I mean...
Well, and nationally, I would say that the tone... The tone that we see in the press is that, okay, and this relates to the story of the Pentagon's waste, which I want to bring by way of contrast. I have mentioned when I was talking about the national quality of the homelessness crisis that there is a million here and a million there. 138 million is the largest amount that I saw actually being spent. And that's in Los Angeles. But that's nothing compared to what the Pentagon has available to itself. From Tom Dispatch, article by William D. Hartung on the excesses of the Pentagon, he writes, from spending $150 million on private villas for a handful of personnel in Afghanistan to blowing $2.7 billion on an air surveillance balloon that doesn't work, the latest revelations of waste at the Pentagon are just the most recent howlers in a long line of similar stories stretching back at least five decades. Other hot-off-the-presses examples would include the Army's purchase of helicopter gears worth $500 each, but were paid $8,000 each, and the accumulation of billions of dollars worth of weapons components that will never be used. And then there's the one that would have to be everyone's favorite Pentagon waste story, the spending of $50,000 to investigate the bomb-detecting capabilities of African elephants. And here's a shock, they didn't turn out to be that great. And he writes, the elephant research, of course, represents chump change in the Pentagon's wastage sweepstakes and in the context of its $600 billion-plus annual budget. But think of it as indicative of the absurd lengths the Department of Defense will go to when what's at stake is throwing away taxpayer dollars. That's in Tom Dispatch by William D. Hartung. I have more of that. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. He writes, keep in mind that the above examples are just the tip of the tip of a Titanic iceberg of military waste. He writes, in a recent report he did for the Center for International Policy, he identified 27 recent examples of such wasteful spending totaling over $33 billion. That's with a B, and there was no more. That was no more than a sampling of everyday life in the 21st century world of the Pentagon. The staggering persistence and profusion of such cases suggests that it's time to rethink exactly what they represent. Far from being aberrations in need of correction to make the Pentagon run more efficiently, wasting vast sums of taxpayer dollars should be seen as a way of life for the Department of Defense. And he goes into some details, and I could skip forward on that. But before he does, I want to say that I agree with the tone of what he's saying, and I would add to it that it's not an aberration. It is a way of life for the Department of Defense, and it is a way of life for us because these funds are taken from us. And I've often mentioned that when you see something in the corporate press about how much money is spent on defense, and it's always defense as opposed to imperial aggression, which is what it really is, you see that it takes less than half the budget. It's a gigantic part of the pie chart. But that's because they don't add in the debt payments for previous wars. And when you add that all together, it takes more than half the budget. So when it comes to what your taxes are taken for, what your, and what your son's blood is taken for, the Pentagon is the elephant in the room, so to speak. Continuing forward in Hartung's article, by rewarding Lockheed Martin for its wasteful practices, Congress set a precedent that has never been superseded. A present-day case, actually he was referring to the C-5A many years ago, is, speak of the devil, Lockheed Martin's F-35 combat aircraft at $1.4 trillion with a T in procurement and operating costs over its lifetime. It will be the most expensive weapons program ever undertaken by the Pentagon or anyone else on planet Earth. And the warning signs are already in. Tens of billions of dollars in projected cost overruns and myriad performance problems before the F-35 is even out of its testing phase. Now, when I read that sort of thing, I think that's terribly wasteful, and also think that, if it doesn't work, maybe that'll prevent nuclear war, which would be far worse than wasting titanic sums of money. It would be wasting the entire planet. So you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, going out to you via 90.7 FM on the transmitter on the hill and other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM, where you can donate to KBOO. If you are interested in volunteering, we are having a membership drive coming up later this month. So contact the volunteer coordinator at 503-231-8032, extension 213. And stay tuned to KBOO and KBOO.FM, where we go out to all the ships at sea.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Underground Graduate School. Classes that begin in September include The Problem with Privilege, Direct Action Organizing, and Decoding Plants, Seeing Urban Flora with New Eyes. Portland Underground Graduate School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, future classes, and more can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.